Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Greetings. Welcome. Episode 22 of the Believe Knicks podcast. Matthew Miranda joined by Stacey Patton on a night when the Knicks lost their last semi-meaningful game of the season, 125-114, at home to the Charlotte Hornets. Charlotte has now clinched a play-in spot, which means if the Hawks win one more game this year or the Knicks lose one more game this year, the Knicks will be officially eliminated from the play-in tournament.
Sorry, Matt, does that include tonight's game for the Hawks? Or
if the Hawks, is their game done?
Yeah, they won.
They have to win one more. Okay. It's still at one. So that's where we are. Not really anything more than a formality, but there's the formality. Some things worth talking about from the game that I think will expand into part of our later discussions. But let's start with you, Stacey. What stood out to you from tonight's effort?
Yeah. It's tough, you know, like I think you hear a lot about people saying the Knicks just lack talent. And on paper, you look at the Hornets, they have at least one player who's better than I think LaMelo Ball is better than anyone on the Knicks right now.
Yeah.
I don't know that he's better than Randall was last year, but the fact that I even have to ask that means that this year it's no question.
Right? You would put him this year ahead of Barrett, right?
I would put him this year ahead of Randall too. Oh, do you think Barrett has been better than Randall? Either yes, way.
I would put Barrett this year ahead of Randall, but
LaMelo Ball was an all-star this year. Right, and it wasn't undeserved. And,
right.
And he's also, when someone's an all-star at age 20 in their second year, it usually means that they're capable of way better play. They're also capable of much worse play, right? They're going to be high variance at that all-star level. But he's that good. Miles Bridges, I would argue, has been better than Randall this year. Yes. He's averaging 27-4.
Yes.
20.74, not 27-4 for those who might. Not a great three-point shooter, but overall much more efficient. So they have two better players better than anyone else on the Knicks roster. But then you watch the Knicks play, and like you see how they can play for long stretches. Like Mitchell Robinson dominated. Like you look at some of the possessions they had, Mitchell Robinson just ate Plumlee for lunch. There's no way that guy should hang on the court next to him. That's what I think. That has nothing to do with, I mean, it's just I saw it. There was one play Plumlee pump faked him at the free throw line, tried to drive by him. That's a play that Mitchell Robinson has fallen for in the past. And Mitch just stood there, waited for Plumlee to do his little bullshit move, and then just smacked the shit out of it. Right. And I was like, that's what should happen every time. And it doesn't. You know, there were some fluky things. Kelly Oubre went 4-for-7 from three and had 21 points. I don't think the Knicks played poor defense on Kelly Oubre.
He had some tough threes. He had some Kelly Oubre threes.
Yeah, it was a lot of bullshit. You know, he was just feeling it. You know, I'm not worried about Kelly. Like, I'm sure that'll convince some Knicks fans that we need to sign him.
Right.
I'm not in that boat. But I think but the Knicks still had a chance to win it. And a big reason they had a chance to win it was that Emmanuel quickly played the beginning of the fourth. He only played 23 minutes tonight. He did not have a good first stint, but he came in and Emmanuel quickly went 1-for-6 from three tonight and still finished with 16 points and 12 shots. That's because he went 5-for-6 from 2-point range. He had 4 assists to 0 turnovers. I saw your article on Alec Burks, and I hate having to do this because I think Alec Burks is like one of the Knicks' better players when he's allowed to play off ball.
Yes. Yes.
He is arguably the Knicks' best shooter, and if he's not, he's number two to Evan Fournier.
Yeah.
He's very versatile. He can get to the free throw line. He's great slashing when he can pump fake, get his guy in the air. He doesn't have to create on his own. He can create on his own in a pinch, but the Knicks have abused that. He's also a good defender when he's defending big wings. And maybe the reason why Tibbs went to him is because LaMelo Ball is shaped like a big wing, but the results were certainly that quickly was more effective defending LaMelo Ball than Burks was. I think that, you know, one of Tibbs' shortcomings is he overvalues, at least in guards, size versus speed. And you see that. You see that it could be a product of the modern NBA or whatever, but they started Elf last year. Elf was bigger and more switchable than Quickly or Rose, but both of those guys were better at getting through screens.
Yeah.
Which is probably the most important trait for guards right now. And, you know, once Quickly went out, that's when the game swung towards the Hornets, and by the time Quickly came back in, it was too late. I'm not alone in this. You know, Monica McNutt, Alan Hahn both mentioned this in the post game. I think it's a fair question. And that's just one of the rotation decisions. And it all comes back to, why did Alec Burks play 41 minutes and have to come back in? Well, Quickly played 12 minutes in a row. Maybe he had to sit. Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, but if you started him, and I'm not saying you have to bench Burks, you could bench Fournier, but you play Burks and Fournier together, it kills your foot speed on the perimeter. And then in the fourth, yeah, like Burks was walking the ball up the floor. And that's because A, Tibbs has him doing it, and B, because like that's not like, I'm not even saying he's a bad ball handler, but he's a good ball handler in one-on-one,
yes,
near the paint, where he can use like one or two moves. But like handling ball pressure from someone like Davion Mitchell or, you know, some of the quick guards that the Hornets threw at him, that's not his forte. Like, why are you having him do that when you have capable guards? And Deuce McBride played 9 minutes, and people were like, well, he didn't play well. He was a minus 11. But he's not getting a chance, right? When some guys play really poorly, their minutes aren't changed. And what other guys do, their minutes are affected. Like, Obi had 13 minutes tonight.
Yep.
And Randall played well.
And by the way, that's Obi coming off of the best five-game stretch of his young career, and the five-game stretch where, for the first time ever, he played 20 minutes in, I think, four of the five games. Like, so he's clearly, like, he's gotten more opportunity. He's delivered. And it's not like it's a night where Randall had 30 and 10, but no Obi.
Yeah, and Randall did bounce back a little bit.
A little.
I think RJ was much more effective against the defense. I would have rather gone through him. I'm not sure who is directing the Knicks to go through Randall in crunch time versus RJ. I don't know if it's him or if it's Tibbs. But I think that I'm not saying RJ is better. I'm saying tonight especially, given how shitty the Hornets perimeter defense is, versus how, you know, PJ Washington, Bridges are reasonably solid defenders. Yes. That probably was the matchup to attack. They didn't do that. And it's extremely frustrating. And like, no one is saying that these guys need to, like, Fournier played 36 minutes and he had 30 points, right? So maybe he needed to. Burks played 41 minutes and he had 12 points and four. Did he really have to play 41 minutes on 12 points on 4-for-15 shooting?
He was Dennis Rodman on the glass. Of course he had to.
It's not that Alec Burks should be benched. He could have played 30. That's 10 more minutes you could have given to McBride and or Quickly. You want to play Fournier today? He was hot. Fine. Randall played 36 minutes for a pretty. He had 21-7-5. He played well. I won't say that on offense. On defense, I didn't think he played well. But did he have to play 36 minutes? That's what's just incredibly frustrating. And it's like, and especially when Quickly was like, you want to roll with what's working. You want to roll with the lineups that are working. Quickly was having a ton of success. And I think the most frustrating thing is that in the second quarter, I was really looking for the bench to blow the game open, and they didn't. And a lot of that is their own fault. But some of it was shit, like Mitchell Robinson missing a dunk. Them just, you know, bobbling a pass that they're going to catch 9 out of 10 times. It's like the margin for error for the bench is so small that, like, if they don't blow the game open, not only is it a huge detriment to the Knicks winning the game, because usually the bench blowing the game open is their only chance of winning. Mm-hmm. But also it means that Tibbs is not going to go back to them, you know? So just a very frustrating game. Cause I, on paper, you can tell me, like, this is what I've gone back and forth debating, like, how I think about Tibbs. It's like, on the one hand, do I think the Charlotte Hornets have better talent than the Knicks? If you look at their top end talent, yeah. But if I look at the two teams play each other, no, I think the Knicks should have won this game. And like, that's not me trying to take credit away from the Hornets. That's not me being a whiny sour grapes fan, like the Knicks should have won the game. But if I'm judging how Tom Thibodeau coached, I think there are things he did that actively gave us a worse chance. I'm not trying to take away anything from the Hornets. I'm trying to be a loose or loser. But I think we're trying to figure out what we should do going forward. And with that in mind, the Knicks' chances were hurt, I think, by Tom Thibodeau today.
Who? What guard besides Quickly? Like, how would you have apportioned? Let's say you cut Burks from 40 to 30. McBride did not have like one of the great games of his career. Is it a matter of you want to play Quickly 30 minutes? Is it a matter of let McBride work through his struggles? Are you a secret member of the Ryan Archie Chiacono? I can never say his name. Archie Diacono. He's the one player in the league I can never get his name right. Are you a
member? What about the guy in Milwaukee that's 6'11 and from Greece? Can you say his name?
I've never had a problem with Antetokounmpo and Porzingis. I've never had a problem with international players, really. Ryan Archie Diacono, like, I have to slow my brain down to like school zone speeds to like get through. I've never been able to spell. I don't know what it is about that guy, but anyway, what would you have? Is there a solution to what you saw? Like, I'm going to cut Burks by 10. I'm going to play bigger more. I'm going to play Obi maybe in more lineups with Randall. What would you have wanted to see that you didn't see?
Yeah, I would have cut Randall's minutes by 6. Okay. Played Obi. I would not have cut Mitchell Robinson. I thought Jericho Sims was, this is one of his worst games.
He struggled a little.
It just was what it was.
Yeah.
He just, I think against guards with good floaters, LaMelo really victimized in this. He's still figuring out when to contest and his timing on those. He'll get it. He gave Jericho 11 minutes. That was not too little to get into a rhythm. I didn't think McBride was that bad. He missed his shots. I don't think he made a lot of mistakes on defense. I actually really liked his defense on LaMelo. I think either giving him half of the 5 minutes you mentioned you could get him 5 minutes more and Quickly 5 minutes more, or you could have just given all 10 to Quickly. In particular, I don't think Quickly needed to come out at the end.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that starting Quickly would have, but that would have been the way I would have gone. The top choice probably would have just been to give to Quickly. If you want to give McBride a few more minutes too, I would have done that. But I don't think Alec Burks needed to play 41 minutes because you had two good options there. That's the point.
So I want to ask you, Schwinn tweeted about this a little bit after the game, and it was, you know, it's not unprecedented, but it's rare. On the post-game show, Wally Szczerbiak, Monica McNutt, and Alan Hahn were talking, and sometimes late in seasons, MSG seems to allow its employees, and I always feel that it's like still within a certain, they can talk certain things that they can't normally talk. And after this game, there was a discussion about, you know, Fournier and the team was in a rhythm, but clearly, like, you're still giving stuff up. Like, the Knicks, Fournier had a great game shooting. The Knicks didn't lose this game because they couldn't score points. The Knicks lost this game because they could not stop Charlotte.
Yeah, I don't think it was necessarily Fournier had to be out, but I do think Quickly had to be in. And I do think over the course, like, that's the thing. You get into these arguments and it's like, well, who are you taking minutes from? And it's like, you can balance them better, right? And maybe those guys would have been fresher at the end of the fourth. But if you say that, you're the minutes police, of course.
Right? Yeah. So one thing I'm wondering about is, we've talked all year about, you know, Thibodeau's issues and Randall's issues and different people's issues, particularly those two, I think. And we'll certainly talk about them both tonight also. But I am curious if when McNutt and Szczerbiak and Hahn were talking, you run up with this Knick team always, I feel like, or often. You end up in this this situation where, if you're playing, you know, if you're playing Evan Fournier, you are making a choice. Like, you are hoping that his shooting is there, and you are giving up defensive speed on the perimeter. To a lesser extent, depending on the lineup, also you do that with Burks. At what point do we, or maybe we've already done it and it just hasn't been talked about, or maybe we don't feel this way as a fan base, but because he's so quiet, I don't think people talk about Leon Rose as much as they would a more involved general manager. And I was thinking tonight, like, the Knicks have a lot of problems this year, and Thibodeau has certainly earned his criticism. But I don't feel like I don't feel that this is a team with a clear cut. Here are the five that you want to play down the stretch. And, you know, you've got your five two-way players. Go for it. Like, you're always having to make some sort of a sacrifice with this team. And Is it fair to say that Leon Rose has escaped the public heat and Thibodeau has kind of taken that for him? Because I'm not saying that what Leon Rose did last offseason was like a blatant mistake, because as I said before, I think most people supported it. But based on how it's worked out, people say a lot, like you said, like this is a talent. It's not a roster devoid of talent, and it's not. But I also don't think it's very talented, because you're playing certain people that you have to give something up to have them in the game, which is normal. I know that's basketball. That's most teams. I think maybe specifically what I'm asking is, like, did Leon Rose fail Tom Thibodeau? Was this a roster that was going to do something with a better coach or an optimum coach?
No, I think my take is that, I mean, if you look at the East, let's look at the standings, right? Mm-hmm. I think the Knicks weren't making they weren't getting in the top six.
Right.
Heat, Bucks, Sixers, Celtics, Bulls, Raptors. If you want to argue they're better than Raptors, the Cavs are right there. The Nets are not in the top six, right? And the Nets have, you know, the best players you could find to come to play in New Jersey.
Right.
So, you know, it's the Hawks beat the Knicks last year, still have a more talented roster. They're fighting just for a play-in. So, no, I'm not saying that. I do think they could be a play-in team. Yes. I think that. So how much do you care that the Knicks are not a play-in team versus, you know, being the 11th seed? And if you say I don't care, that's not good enough. I get that. But was this roster, like, I would ask also, like, what were the options? Who was available this offseason that would have made that kind of a difference? There's one player I can think of, and I'm not sure how well he fits, but I'm also not going to hang my hat on that. If you want to say the Knicks should have traded for DeMar DeRozan, and could have met that price, I'm not going to blame you. I really am, given how Randall has reacted to even having to adjust to Evan Fournier this year.
Yeah,
I'm skeptical about how well it would have worked out. But sure, that's a fair argument. They didn't get DeMar DeRozan. Other than that, though, like some people are like, well, like instead of Fournier, they should have got Lonzo. A, Lonzo got tampered.
Lonzo wasn't coming here. Lonzo was going to Chicago. They tampered to get him. He was going there.
And he's been hurt. Yep. And like, would that have changed this team?
I don't know how much. I like him better, but I don't think that, like, Lonzo Ball would have been the difference between the play-in or not.
Yeah, and then other than that, they gave you, at the 58th pick, they gave you a guy that's coming and play, not tonight, but pretty well
at center. They had a good draft.
McBride has been if anything, their draft has been responsible for more wins than you know, a lot of the guys Tibbs has leaned on. I think Rose is still in very much an incomplete grade. It's going to be what is his big move, right? Because a lot of their moves are incremental moves to get solid young assets, and like. That could mean players like Grimes, Quickly, McBride, or that could mean second-round picks in the future. But a lot of that is just incrementally increasing your asset base, which is, there's nothing wrong with that. How he's going to be judged, though, is what he does with that. And I don't know, does it turn into Donovan Mitchell? Then he probably gets an A. Does it turn into something like Danny Ainge, where they don't use that stuff and it peters out? That's an F. You know, other outlets are, does RJ or Quickly become a star? Or you know, I'm not just, Obi could become a star, right? Do they somehow swing a trade for Randall where they get like Jeremy Grant or someone who blossoms into a star here? You know, that's in the realm of possibility, right? So, but overall, they're very much at an incomplete. Tibbs is very much at like a B minus C plus overall. Where he did a really good job last year, but he has very, very noticeable flaws. So, and as far as this year, I really don't subscribe to the people who are like, at first they were saying, well, Fournier might be quote unquote better, but we needed Bullock and Alfred Payton back. I think even people who believe that have fallen off of that take because A, the Knicks have moved back into the top 10 in defensive rating. And B, it's very clear Fournier is a much better player than Bullock.
Bullock did not have a great season.
Yeah. Then there's still people who are saying, well, Quickly didn't play well until now, so Tibbs didn't have a real point guard. I would argue that since when Quickly was on the floor earlier in the year, You know, they were playing much better than they did with Kemba, and it wasn't like Kemba was giving you much better shooting than Quickly. And he didn't try McBride until you have no choice, and try Grimes until he had no choice. The front office, and then the last thing that people will say was, well, he signed all of these players to big contracts. There's pressure to play him. That's one speculation, but B, they also gave him a lot of young guys, including first round picks, who I'd imagine they have some interest in. And if he benched, or if he gave those guys at least some minutes, it's not even about you have to bench Fournier, you have to bench Burks, you have to bench Randall. Don't play him 40 minutes a game. Don't play him 35 minutes a game. Mm-hmm. He wasn't willing to do that. And also, don't play your worst defenders. You don't have to play Burks, Kemba, and Fournier together. You can mix it up, right? You can play Fournier with Grimes. You can play Fournier with IQ. You can play Burks with IQ.
You are always going to remember this season for Kemba, Fournier slash Burks playing defense together. I feel like it's
Like that's none of them. Even Kemba is manageable. If you like, you could play Kemba next to Grimes and RJ, he wouldn't look as bad.
Kemba draws mad charges.
He draws charges, and like, yeah, his defenses are way more exaggerated when you play him with Fournier, and also like the next perimeter scheme is switch everything. Yep. And like, so that means that even Burks, who isn't a he's not a good on ball defender. But even teams that are like, I don't know if we can beat Alec Burks tonight. Oh, wait, let's run a basic screen with Fournier. They're going to switch it. Now I have Ja Morant going against Fournier. Yep. What do you think is going to happen?
Yeah.
And there's ways to avoid that. And that's not a rip on Fournier. That's not a rip on Burks. That's a rip on like that. But that's where coaching helps, right? It's no team has a roster full of guys who are good at everything.
Yeah.
But they manage to play lineups to mitigate their weaknesses. And, you know, when your starting lineups throughout the season have been the worst net rating for teams that play them in minutes, and your bench lineups have had the best net rating, mm-hmm. part of that you could say, of course, is, well, yeah, the Knicks are a unique team, and they have 10 guys who are very close together, so their bench is much better than other benches. Their starting lineup isn't that good, but the starting lineup was awful, and the bench was elite, right? Like, mixing and matching, trading off a little bit, mm-hmm. It's tough to believe there was no room for opportunity there. Mm-hmm. And there are guys that just were unused until in the favor of injured guys, right? Like Sims, you can tell me wasn't ready, but he was playing Nerlens Noel, who was completely broken and could barely move.
It's hard to believe that Grimes wasn't ready to play until January.
He wasn't ready until coincidentally at the same time. It was just a complete coincidence that at the same time Tibbs deemed him ready, they happened to have everyone missing due to COVID.
Right. It's kind of a weird extent. It's Tibbs is with mixing and matching. He reminds me of coaches who won't who don't stagger like their best player. They have like two great players and they don't stagger them, and can't figure out like why they're losing when they're both off the floor. And he just doesn't like. You know, you saw it the other game. Thank God they won. But the Knicks game, I'm already forgetting who they beat on Monday. Chicago. When they beat Chicago, Toppin had a nice game again. And Randall was out the first, I think, 9 minutes of the fourth. And it wasn't a game that Randall was having like a great game. And it was a close game. It's coming down to the wire. And about 3 minutes left in the game, Thibodeau sends in Randall. And Randall didn't even look interested in being there. We'll talk about him later. But I really thought, like, if they lose this game, people are going to jump through their TVs to riot at MSG, because it would have been such – it would have been like the chef's kiss of Thibodeau's season would have been losing that game after bringing in Randall for Toppin.
You mean this game today? Or
no, Chicago on Monday.
He did bring in – Randall for Toppin.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. But like Toppin was playing well. Randall like didn't have an amazing game, but like Tibbet, like you would never have seen ever Randall being on the floor while the Knicks were playing really well, Randall sitting for 9 minutes and then Toppin coming in. You would never see Derrick Rose or Burks playing well the first 9 minutes of the quarter. And then quickly coming in. Like, I have felt all season that one of the problems, I might not be seeing this correctly, but it doesn't seem to me like the same rules exist for everybody. And there haven't been any leaks about anything from the team, but I just feel that, like, in any workplace, you know, nobody picks up on double standards quicker than the workers. And there was something all season strange about Tibbs talks about accountability. And, you know, even if a young guy plays well, he still has to earn it and prove he can be there. And Tibbs has this incredibly quick hook for, you know, Grimes and Toppin. But Randall can sleepwalk through 75 games and he's still bringing him in with 3 minutes left when he's not really doing much.
Yeah.
I can't get into that. I'm going to give you another. Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead.
No, I'll. Here's like with Tibbs, I get it. It's like, and weirdly, for all the talk about workers and, you know, the culture being affected, the kids seem to like Tibbs a lot. Now, part of that might be that if you look at these kids, you know, IQ basically, it seems like, is.
I think he likes everybody.
IQ plays video games, is religious, has like a serious girlfriend and his family, and that's it.
Yep.
I think if I ever saw IQ at a club or something, I would be convinced it was an imposter. RJ is basically that.
Right, right, right.
Grimes, I know less about that, but also Grimes, I've talked about this a bunch. Grimes came into college as a top five recruit who was an on-ball, supposed to be that guy, had to reinvent himself, transfer, and become like a shooter, mm-hmm. and made that work. You can't tell me that happens without having crazy work ethic. Mm-hmm. All of these guys, you haven't seen any of these guys. And by the way, we have seen young guys pout before, right? You haven't seen any of these guys show a poor attitude or anything. So that could be part of it. But they do love playing for Tibbs. I don't think that's deniable at this point. So far, it hasn't seemed to have an effect. But it's something to notice that there seems to be a double standard, you know? You know, when he talks about you could make nine great plays and one bad one. Mm-hmm. Who are you talking about? Because it seems like when Obi makes nine great plays and makes one bad one, he goes out.
Yep.
And when Randall makes one good shot,
yep.
it excuses nine bad plays. Mm-hmm. Like mm-hmm. I haven't watched the game 3, 4, 5, 10,000 times, but I've watched it. I've watched most of these clips multiple times. I think a lot of smarter people than me have. And so that excuses work. Like the only thing that seems to be different about these guys is that they're older and he trusts them more. And maybe there are lower variance in practice. I don't know. Mm. But you know, it's just, it's not what's working on the floor right now. So, I mean, how much of that is Randall being a stinker this year, right? Like Randall has just been awful. Mm-hmm. And I think most of the people, I think the biggest argument Tibbs fans are, and I haven't said I would fire Tibbs, by the way. I am very much on the fence about this. But a lot of people who want Tibbs to come back or say that he shouldn't be blamed will cite that, like, it's basically Randall. He was their best player. The front office gave him a big contract. Mm-hmm. If he's going through stuff off the court, whatever, all I can judge him on is his play, right? And it has been bad. And how much can you blame Tibbs for that, right? I would say I could blame him, like, just because he's playing bad and he's paid well, you don't have to play him 37 minutes. Like, you can play him 30 minutes. You can play him 28. Like, that's what, if you look at guys like Nikola Jokic or Joel Embiid, who are significantly better players than Julius Randle, I don't know if that's up for debate. If someone wants to argue with me on that, feel free to teach me. But I think I'm pretty comfortable saying Nikola Jokic and Joel Embiid are better players than Julius Randle, even last year. Fair to say?
Yes.
Yeah, right. And they aren't playing those because they're 250 plus pounds. And he's not that good. And he's 250 plus pounds. Why are you playing? And he plays better when he plays fast.
Yes.
So I think those things are on Tibbs. But the last thing I'll say on that note, and I'll throw this back to you, and I know you had another question, and you know, you could put that first too. I was thinking about this, like, when have I seen a star play, like, last game against Detroit, that was when, not Detroit,
Chicago,
right. That was the low point for me with Julius Randle. There were multiple possessions on defense where there would be a guy coming down the lane and he just stood flat footed.
He did it tonight. Like, there was a play when, there was a play when, oh God, somebody drove from like top of the key, maybe it was Rozier, someone drove all the way down and like, Randall was the last line of defense, and he just turned and watched. And I know he's hurt, and I wrote about this. If he's hurt, if he's that hurt, that he can't rotate 2 feet, he shouldn't be playing. Playing
36 minutes.
Yeah, he shouldn't be playing.
He should be playing at all, let alone 36 minutes, right? But there were multiple last, and it was disheartening to see. And like, and it's everything. It's like the plays last year or even earlier this year where he'd get stopped, but he would immediately know where to go with the ball. This year, there's another added second. He has to look around.
Yes.
Or he throws up something. Like he's not feeling it at all. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking about when I'd seen a player just seem so out of sync. And I actually thought of Melo, like right before Linsanity happened. At that time, I don't know if you remember, but he was in a bad funk. Maybe not this bad, but Stoudemire was healthy.
Right.
And the Knicks were in a bad funk, and they didn't have a point guard, and that was getting the scapegoat. But a lot of it was that just Melo couldn't do it. Yeah. Linsanity came in. That created the whole thing. The next year, Melo came back and was an MVP caliber player. Won the scoring title, Knicks were a 2 seed, all of that. But why I think this would be different is two things. One, Melo had a much better, like Julius Randle had last season, and then he had the Pelican season where he was a really good sixth man. Mm-hmm. And then he had a bunch of years as being a talented but, you know, incomplete player, right? Mm-hmm. And now he looks again like that's more like he's a good sixth man off the bench. He's something. He's closer to Montrezl Harrell than he is to what he was last year. And that was one thing. I mean, the other thing was that Melo was playing for, like, it became a power struggle between Melo and D'Antoni. Melo won. But D'Antoni was not that front. Like the front office that hired D'Antoni was Donnie Walsh, and he left. That front office, D'Antoni was not their guy. Thibodeau is their guy. So if they have to choose between Randle and Thibodeau, which I think most of us think they will, it doesn't seem like it's going to go Randle's way. The only downside is, you know, can you get positive value for him? But it's a difficult situation. But those are the things I would think about.
I'll give you two reasons why I think it could go Randle's way. Not necessarily that it should, but two reasons why it would. One is, if you're able to trade Randle now, you're trading him at his low point and you're taking back something somebody else doesn't want. Or you're certainly having to attach a first or something to get him off the team, I think. Entering a 4-year extension that is not prohibitive, but right now doesn't look like it belongs with the guy who, like you're saying, other than last season or his last year with the Pels, the rest of his career, Randle is not someone who's going to make $30 million a year. So they may be on the hook whether they want to or not, just because why sell him at his low point? I'm sorry, trade him at his low point. And also, I'm going to take off my, I think we're very objective on this show, and I don't feel like being fair or objective right now. I'm going to go into my like FAN, like caller mode. I just want to complain about World Wide West for a second. There's been some talk that World Wide West maybe was putting the idea in people's ears that like Thibodeau was an issue. I don't think that was ever substantiated. It was a story in the papers for a little bit, which doesn't mean anything. But I will say this, and it's interesting you brought up the Melo in 12 and 13, because this reminds me kind of the same track. One reason Melo was so much better in 2013 was in 12, the Knicks had tried first it was Mike Bibby. I think, and then it was like Mike Bibby was there, Baron Davis was there.
Do not erase my guy, Pablo Prigioni.
Pablo Prigioni was also there, but he was good. I'm not including Pablo in this take. Like Bibby and Davis were both way over the hill. Davis,
Kidd came the next year, right?
Yeah. What's that?
Kidd was the next year.
Kidd and Felton were the next year, and I think that helped Melo a lot, because Melo was a guy who could get you 4 to 5 assists a game, and probably could have been more unselfish than he was. But Melo wasn't a point forward. Like he didn't want to be that kind of player. So that wasn't his thing. I think one of the big surprises of this season is that last year, I think a lot of us felt like, man, the Knicks had this great season getting like nothing from Elfrid Payton. Like if they can get any kind of a good point guard, like, wow. And I think we thought they had that. They have the names. They have guys who can play that way, but I would say the first certainly half of the season, more than that even, maybe to the All-Star break. Like, I don't think the guard play was much better this year around Randall.
Stop it.
That's my dog, everybody. I don't think that Randall was on a better team this year. I think a lot of the struggle falls on him. But I don't feel like, you know, if I thought Randall this year would end up kind of halfway between last season and his norms. So I thought, like, he'll shoot like 45% from the field, like league average from three, and that's okay. Like, I can work with that. Obviously, he's cratered from distance, and there's other issues that maybe we'll get into. But I think that, like, you know, World Wide West was not brought into the Knicks to sign Evan Fournier and Kemba Walker to, like, a good market deal. Like, and I understand, you know, like you said earlier, who was the option? I don't know. But at some point, there was all the hype of, like, oh my God. And it reminds, this was always the talk. D'Antoni, Fizdale was going to get the Knicks big time play. He was going to get Durant and Kyrie because people love to talk to David Fizdale. D'Antoni was going to bring in LeBron and somebody else because he coached at the Olympic team and people love that style of play. There's always this mythology about the person who's going to attract someone to New York, and in a completely irrational sense, I'm going into this offseason being like, I need World Wide West to justify his hype, because other than, I think, pushing them to draft quickly and maybe saying shit about Tibbs, World Wide West might not as well even exist.
Yeah, I think there's a few things. I strongly disagree with the idea that they were not better than last year. I think Evan Fournier is a really good player and is way better than Bullock.
You think Fournier this season is way better than what Bullock was last season?
Yes, yes.
Because why? Because of his shooting?
Volume of three-point shooting.
Okay.
I think Bullock was – in volume and versatility.
Okay.
Bullock could stand still and hit threes.
Right.
Fournier can get to the rim. He can shoot off movement. I think he also allowed them to, he would allow them with a real coach to kind of play different lineups and be more versatile. Mm-hmm. The other thing is that, so then at a point guard, if Kemba wasn't the answer, and to Tibbs' credit, I don't know how much of this is on the front office, but it was pretty clear early on Kemba was good. The one thing when people are like, we needed Elfrid Payton, I think that is an insult to Quickley and McBride. I think McBride is already better than Elfrid Payton ever has been. As a defender, as a shooter.
Have people been calling for the return of Elfrid Payton?
No, but my point is, like, if you look at the totality of what the Knicks added, Grimes.
Oh, okay.
Grimes and McBride, year two of Quickley, year three of RJ. They gave them Jericho Sims, even if Noel and Taj were hurt.
Right.
The only thing you could say maybe is that Mitch was out of shape for the first. The mitigating factors is Mitch. There's three things that I would give to Tibbs that are, I don't think they built a worse roster, so I'm not blaming the front office for this. One, Rose was hurt, which that is an understandable thing. Which I don't blame the front office for signing him, because, you know, there weren't a lot of great options and he was that good for them. But I also don't blame Tibbs, because that's what happens. Mitch came out to camp out of shape. No excuse. That's 100% on him. And the third thing is that Randall turned into a pumpkin. And those are three things I would put neither on the front office or Tibbs. Mm-hmm. But would I say that in terms of guards, I think he had better talent at the guard positions. I'm just not willing to. He had Grimes also, and he had many options. He refused to play. As when it comes to World Wide West, I know World Wide West is supposed to be that guy, but I also just think, where was that guy coming from? Was it getting Sabonis or Halliburton to demand that they only come to the Knicks? Was it getting DeRozan, which, if you think that was, like, that's the thing. DeRozan was really the only star available. Like, none of these things have come to fruition in terms of, did you want him to trade for Westbrook? I don't think any of us wanted that.
Oh, God, no.
And then if you look at that, Leon Rose has not hitched his wagon to getting stars. In the meantime, it's not satisfying, but he has made incremental moves that boost the overall value of this roster. And that's all. I really don't think he could have done much more. And I think in the meantime, he gave Thibodeau a good enough roster, even with the injuries, to compete for the play-in. That's the best I could ask him to do. Now, if you want to say, well, missing the play-in and getting the 11 seed isn't a fireable offense, I'm willing to live with you on that. I think that there's numerous things Tibbs have shown that the front office needs to talk to him about. But if you want to bring him back next year, you know, and force him to play the kids more, and I think he's been better when he's done that, I think that can work. But am I going to put this on the front office? No, because I think overall they've still done a pretty good job. They found value where there is to be had. And if the criticism is World Wide West hasn't gotten us Donovan Mitchell or Devin Booker yet, I just don't think that deal has been out there.
The Knicks have had, you know, some volatile personalities and players over the years. J.R. Smith, there's John Starks. I mean, I could go on and on about that, but I have never, I want to switch now to talking about Randall. I know we've talked about him a lot, but it doesn't seem like this story ever ends, or at least, you know, it's like the ocean, just it keeps more waves coming in. And Randall had a bad little two-game span where at the end of the Utah game, he has this quizzical beef with Gobert that he immediately denies in the press conference that there was anything there at all. Or I don't know if it was a press conference. Yeah, it was a press conference. And then in the Chicago game, everyone by now has seen the Zapruder film of Randall throwing the ball behind his back and then leaving the floor. I'm not here to like break down Randall's game or Randall's whatever anymore, but I'm just curious if you can remember on the Knicks or on any team in sports. I can't remember the last time I saw a player who was not a star like rise so inexplicably to such a level and then fall inexplicably to such a level. Certainly with the Knicks, I cannot think of, maybe I'm overlooking someone obvious, but I don't think I've ever seen this before. And the weekend, the Sunday, Monday thing just made it work. There has been, and I'm with you, like, I'm not going to pretend that I know what's going on. And I think his name is Chris Persenian.
Okay. Wait, hold on. I will find it. His name is phonetically in his bio.
Yeah, it's like Persenian.
Percy Einen.
Okay, so Chris Percy Einen. I had never heard this, and I don't know if he was being rhetorical or had seen something, but he was debating someone else about Randall and about something about Randall, and made mention of, like, I guess in his opinion, he thinks Randall is demonstrating, he said, like, mental health tics. I think that was the expression that he used. I can't go there. I'm not going there. It reinforces to me how little we know about what's going on. Like, nobody has an answer. This isn't, well, he tore his ACL, that's why he's struggling. Or
it's not even he has the yips, right?
Like, so that when you earlier, I was thinking about the yips earlier, not in a physical sense, but when you made the description of, like, of Randall, and you see it, the difference this year in his passing, where last year, you know, there was...
First of all, I would say that was the last few games. Overall this year, I think his passing has been similar to last year. It's just the windows aren't as big because teams don't have to worry about his shooting. But sorry,
maybe that's it. Maybe that's it. I felt since the Atlanta series that something got into... Let me rephrase this. In the Atlanta series, it was clear that the defensive game plan was designed to fluster him and flustered him. And I think this season, a lot of teams have, you know, worked off of the Atlanta model and evolved it. But I don't know. I feel like I'm repeating shit we've already said. His energy this season increasingly grows. Even a couple months ago, I would have told you, like, there's no way I wouldn't want to trade Randall, even though he's struggling, like, because there could be an explanation and he could bounce back. And, like, if we know the guy had stress 2 years ago trying to live up to that contract, it would make sense that he might be putting even more pressure on himself to live under what he's now stepped into. But I just as a fan, I am tired this season of seeing Julius Randle so negative. I'm not saying anything about him and his right to his feeling or his actions. I don't know anything. Just as a fan, like when the beef started with Gobert, I'm just so... Randle has become like the family member that I don't want to go out in public with anymore because something's going to happen at some point and I'm just tired of trying to explain it or justify it or accept it or understand it. I'm just tired of it. I don't know if you just emotionally as a fan, like, has Randle... How do you feel? Just emotionally, not objectively, like, is he worth his salary? Can you build around him on offense? Just emotionally, the process of watching how this season has been for him. Where do you find yourself now with Randle?
Yeah, so this isn't going to be a direct answer. Apologize in advance, but I have a story.
Okay.
This reminds me of a story. So a few years ago when I was in my early 20s, I played in a South Asian basketball league in Connecticut. So it was fun. It was during the summer. But I was on one of the free agent teams. So like there were a lot of teams that were friends who played together. And my team was like guys who were interested in just, you know, the leftovers, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And I was the only real ball handler on that team. So I used to have the ball in my hands a lot. And I'm not the greatest shooter. I'm pretty good at getting to the rim. I'm a pretty good passer, and I'm a good defender. Mm-hmm. So I'm good when I have other players on my team. But that team, I had the ball in my hands so much. And I used to try to lead the team, and I was getting really frustrated. And there was one game, so early on in the season, we were just getting blown out a lot. And there was one game we were getting blown out. And there were a lot of people used to talk shit. And, you know, they would stay after and before games. And there was one player in particular I had gone to head-to-head with, and we'd lost a close game. And he, like, we were down big, and, like, we called timeout, and this guy was shit-talking us from the sidelines and yelling or, like, laughing. And I started yelling at him, like, what, do you want something? What do you want? Like, let's go or something.
Right.
And this other guy on my team was like, man, shut up, like, at me. Okay. He was just like, just give it up. Like, we're fucking down 40 points or 30 points. Like, what are you doing?
Right.
And that was eye-opening to me. And, like, so I think that made me get a little more serious. I'm not saying, like, for me at least, that was a turnaround this season. We played a little more seriously. We won a couple games. Like, we still lost the playoffs. We didn't do that well. But we played better the rest of the game year out, more as a team. Mm-hmm. And I think, like, with Randle, that's what it is. Like, there's times when someone gets in a fight with someone else, you know, on your team, you're like, hell, like, I got your back. Like, last year when Randle, you know, against the Nets, you know, like, he got called for a foul or, you know, he got called for that up and down.
Yes.
That might have been reasonably on him. All of New York had his back, right? Because you've been killing it for us all year. Mm-hmm. And now when it's like, you're not doing, like, play your best, do well, win, then talk shit, then worry about this stuff. And he hasn't been doing that. That's the most, like, I don't care if you have a chip on your shoulder. But if you're not doing the work to earn that chip or to earn the right to speak on that, then no, it's useless to me. It's just, you're just being a baby. You're mm-hmm. whining. Mm-hmm. Just like I was probably when that dude was talking shit to me. And like, I should have been focused more on helping my team. Mm-hmm. And I'm thankful that my teammate was like, no, shut up. Like, it's not important. So where am I at emotionally with Randle? I feel pity more than anything else. Like, I feel bad that people are chanting Obi Toppin. It must be rough going from the guy that you had MVP chance last year. Now he's getting boos when he gets introed. Mm-hmm. But you have to get back on defense. I'm sorry. You can't jog back on defense. You don't want to get played as many minutes. Tell Tibbs. And if it's, and I blame Tibbs for that, but it doesn't excuse Randle. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I blame Tibbs for playing him too many minutes. It doesn't excuse Randle. You can't jog back on defense. You cannot just simply blow off rotations. If he tried on defense, even some of the most excruciating offensive possessions where he just dribbles to nowhere and throws it up, and it's still better than his first year here, I will say that.
Yes.
But marginally so.
Yes.
Even that would be palatable if he gave a shit on defense. And he doesn't. So emotionally, where am I at?
In a perfect world, I would love to see him fix this. I would love to see him figure it out. Mm-hmm. I'd love to see him be a part, because he did give us a lot last year. I think he is a good person. I would not like to see a messy divorce with him, because I don't think it's a situation like KP where he's been a malevolent. I don't even think he's been a bad locker room guy. The guy seemed to really like him. Mm-hmm. I'd like to see him figure it out. But it's such, right now, the way they play on the floor with him out there versus with Obi out there or without him out there, period, it's just so much less fun.
It is.
And he's playing with less. I think he might need a break. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I think maybe he would get that. Maybe he'd play with a different energy. Like, he seemed to be energized by playing with Tibbs last year. Mm-hmm. Maybe now he needs a new coach. Now, if you need a new coach every year to energize your star, that's
probably. Yeah.
But the big difference that I keep coming back to, so I'm trying not to be emotional about it. And emotionally, I'm just sad. And like, we had a guy that brought us back, and it's not even about, like, you know, it's someone letting you down, right? That's not how I feel. It's just like, I wanted this for him. I wanted him to be a part of this next era of the Knicks. And it doesn't look like it's going to happen. So that really just makes me sad. In terms of the non-emotional what to do going forward, do I buy that he can be what he was last year or even a guy worth his contract? I mean, look at the rest of his career. Last year was despite the fact that he shot like shit, this is the, I think, third best shooting percentage year of his career. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's not that out of line. He's not a good shooter. And that's if he was just not a good shooter, but he was a great finisher, he's a great role man, he could pass, and he added value on defense, that'd be okay. But right now, his role should be something like Andre Drummond. That's probably what his ideal role should be. And there's little reason to believe, given the evidence we have, that he can be a lot more than that. And you're really, if you ask me to believe that, you're asking me to believe that the issues we've seen with Motor are going to go away. Mm-hmm. The issues we've seen with, that's really what you're telling me. You're telling me that he's at least an average, league average 3-point shooter, and like whatever reason this year he hasn't been. Mm-hmm. And the issues with Motor on defense are going to go away. If you told me that, I could live with it. Maybe it is. I think I don't know what Chris's intel is. I don't want to rip what his intel is. I think personally, if the Knicks front office wants to make that judgment that this was an anomaly, that's fine. But it's not like this is the only year he's played like this. This is actually more in line with his career. Mm-hmm. So that's where I'm at. Emotionally, I'm just sad that it didn't work out. And unemotionally, I think that this is probably closer to the real Julius Randle than what we saw last year.
I think bigger than, you know, any free agents that the Knicks sign, maybe even bigger than, well, I think the biggest thing the Knicks need this offseason is they need Thibodeau and Randle to ask and answer tough questions about themselves. I think both of them, you know, have really struggled after one season of success, and they have both had such blind spots, I think, this season, that I think that means as much as anything. I think Randle could recover. I think if Randle next season, like, could I see Randle next season shooting 36% from three? I definitely could. And could Thibodeau, you know, learn something from this season, spend the offseason obsessing about what went wrong and learn? Yeah, I think he could. Having said that, I'm gonna close by, I was very inspired by your adult sports story, and I'm gonna tell you one of my own that just, I think, exemplifies the kind of fool that I have to be to constantly be like thinking that this team is on the verge of turning it around. I don't think I've told this story on this pod. I know I've written it. But when I was probably about your age, I can't believe I'm old enough to say that. But when I was in my mid 20s, I played in a baseball league.
That's younger than my age, by the way.
Is it? Okay. I feel better than
32.
So. Okay. Oh, I'll take that. Okay. Okay. You're still young enough to refer to your early 20s as a few years ago, and I am not. I'll say that. So in my mid-20s, there was a wood bat league, and I loved baseball, and I played a lot when I was young. So I was on a team like yours. We formed late enough that enough of us weren't on a team, or they were looking for like one more team, but we didn't know each other. We were all basically strangers, got thrown together very late. And at that point I hadn't played baseball in about 10 years. So I was, you know, I really wanted to see like, do I still have, I was a good player. I wanted to see how it would go. And first couple of games, you know, I was adjusting, but then, and it was just like you said, we were terrible. Like we were getting killed, especially early on. And like, we literally, we had a guy, if you know baseball, this will be funny. We had a guy on first, our pitcher, 3-2, 2 outs. And I'm just expecting like he's going to run because that's what you do when there's 3-2 and 2 outs. And our hitter fouls the ball off and the pitcher doesn't run. So I yell at him on the dugout. I'm like, John, 3-2, 2 outs. Right? And he like nods. So I'm like, okay, he got it. And the very next pitch, once again, like he doesn't go. And then we had a guy who got on base, stole second base, assumed he had been called out, so just started like walking back to the dugout and got like tight. Like it was not a good team. It was not a good team. And I had always played on winning teams. And like that's all I ever cared about was like I just want to win. So one game we are losing 15-0. It's like 94 degrees in July. And my team seems fairly content with like how things are going. And it's driving me nuts. I don't mind losing to someone who's more talented, but like you have to try your best. Like you have to try your best. You cannot be content with this. So I just decided at a point, like no matter what, I'm not getting shut out. Like we're not getting shut out. So my next at bat, I hit a double. I got to third on a sacrifice fly. So now I'm on third. There's one out. And our next hitter, our cleanup hitter, hits a fly ball to shallow right field. Now, when I was a kid, I had good speed. By my mid-20s, that was long, long, long gone. And the third base coach is telling me, like, it's too shallow. Like, just stay where you are. But I wasn't going to have it. Like, I was going to make this happen. And as soon as the guy caught it, I take off from third. And I'm running, like, as fast as I have, probably in 10 years. And the ball gets to the plate, like 10 feet before I do. And I try to like, you know, it was a no collision league. So I had to try to like jump around the catcher who ends up tagging me and knocking me off balance so that I break my ankle. And I get up with a broken ankle and I am like, I'm embarrassed because I got thrown out. I'm concerned because my ankle is clearly broken and I'm hopping to the dugout, assuming that like my teammates will come out and like how nobody fucking moved. Nobody did anything. They all went in the field to play defense. I had to yell at the manager. I'm like, I can't move. Like, I can't play second base.
They just want both teams to have fun, man.
So when I hear myself saying to you, I think Julius Randle can turn it around. And I think Tom Thibodeau can adapt. And I think, like, sure. Like, I realize that that's the same brain that was like, you can make this from third. Like, you can totally make it. So I don't know. We will see.
I want them both to like. I think there's people that probably hated Tibbs or hated Randle,
or certainly do now.
I wouldn't say that. I'm disappointed. In some ways, I'm more disappointed in Tibbs, I guess.
Yeah.
Because Tibbs has the ultimate control. I don't like that. I don't like hearing people say we don't have a point guard. Sorry, I've been on that boat that quickly has been that guy all year. I think it's only the last 6 weeks that it's now that he's shooting well. But that's the thing. The only difference, what I'll say is this. This might be the hottest take of the night. The only difference between how quickly he's playing now versus early in the year is that the shots are going down. His process has been better all year. His defense has been really good.
Yes.
He's been a much better playmaker. The point guard stuff was not the issue. The issue was that he was missing wide open shots, and now he's not. And, you know, if you know anything about his career, that was something that it's easy to believe that's an anomaly. This is the point with Randle, right? Like, you know, some players when their track record is one way and they are bad for some time, you can expect a reversion to the mean.
Yep.
When the opposite happens, you can expect an opposite reversion. Mm-hmm. So what pisses me off about Tibbs is that, like, our young players have just, like, there's so many, every single young player, and this is what drives me crazy, is that Grimes isn't playing. Well, he's probably not ready. He's a rookie. He was a 25 pick. All of a sudden, he comes in, kills it because Tibbs has no choice. oh, well, he needed to wait. He needed to wait his turn and get adjusted. And what a great job Tibbs did with development, right?
Yeah.
McBride didn't play, had 15 points and 9 assists in COVID in December. Then went right back to the bench. Now has started to play. It's the same thing. We're like, well, yeah, like Tibbs, look at his job as development. He's done such a good job, right? There is no way, absolutely no fathomable way, Deuce could have added something when the Knicks were giving up 30 points to complete scrubs off the bench, blowing 20-point leads when their perimeter defense was a sieve, right? No, Deuce wasn't ready, apparently, until everyone else was injured, of course. Then, coincidentally, he magically happened to be ready. Sims, same thing. I'm not saying Sims is a better player even now than Nerlens Noel is healthy. Nerlens Noel has not been healthy all year. Taj, for large parts of the year, hasn't been healthy. Mitch was out of shape. You're telling me that you couldn't... And, like, that's the thing. You don't have to play the same 10 guys every night. It is infuriating to me that even after when the young guys play well, Tibbs has developed them and timed them the right way. And even though it's just kind of the only reason they're getting time now is because of injuries. When they don't play well or in like 5 minutes, it's, well, see, this is why we have to play the vets. And like, that's why every reporter always asks Tibbs, well, at what point do you want to start playing the young guys instead of going for the play-in or going for wins? I was like, the way to go for wins was to play the young guys more, not to bench the vets, but to not play the vets 36 minutes and to try a couple of the guys who, when your weakness was perimeter defense, instead of crying that we lost Elfrid Payton and Reggie Bullock, however good you thought they were on perimeter defense, the front office gave you great players on perimeter defense. You didn't play them. Mm-hmm. Instead of crying that Nerlens Noel was injured, the front office gave you a 6'10 guy who can switch and jump 10 feet in the air. And you wouldn't even go to it. And it's not just to try something, because when you have been forced to try it, it's worked. So you can't just tell me that, like, you don't know and you don't watch them in practice. I watch them in the games and we're even forced to play them. But anyway, like, it's very frustrating. I think that when he has been forced to play them, he's actually done a good job of tailoring how the offense plays and the defense plays to their advantage. Like, he knows ball. It's just he has shitty evaluation a lot of the time, and I don't know what to do with him. And I feel a little bit more confident saying that what I thought before last year, and that's that Randall is probably best suited as a sixth man energy guy, who can just go off against bench defenses, but isn't the guy on a championship team. So
it's always good to end on a positive, so I'm going to end with a positive that I've realized. Something I thought was a negative, but I think it's actually turned into a good thing. When I started watching the Knicks in the 90s, let me ask you what your thoughts are. When you think of the 90s Knicks, who comes to mind to you as the leaders of those teams?
Oh, Pat. Mm-hmm. So Ewing, Oakley, Starks. I guess, like, Harper didn't play that many years, but the first year I started watching the Knicks, he was our point guard. Mm-hmm. So I'll put Harper in there.
Okay.
I want to say Charlie Ward, just because he was the point guard for a lot
later
of years,
on, certainly. Right? Yeah.
So those would be the guys I would name.
2013 Knicks, who were the leaders on that team?
I have to say Melo. I would say Melo. So you mean the team that made the playoffs, so 2012, 2013. I'm not correcting.
The good one. Yeah, the good one. 2012, 13.
The good one. Chandler, obviously, defensive quarterback, as well as, you know, just seemed to be the loudest voice in the room. So I'd say Melo, Chandler, obviously Kidd, Pablo.
Yes.
I mean, yeah, those are the guys.
Okay. On this team, who are the leaders?
Good question.
So I have lamented for a while, like, I don't think there is any, but I will say
this. I would say Taj. Yeah.
I think Taj, but I think a positive from this season, and I don't like how it happened, but sometimes good things come from bad things. I think RJ has shown like clear leadership skills and a desire to be that person. And I think Quickly has shown that too. Obviously we only see what we see, but the other game when you saw Quickly,
with the iPad.
Drawing. And just, you can just, I don't know, if you watch the team every night, you can see personalities and energies and vibes evolve. And I feel good because I feel like it's been a while the Knicks have had, you know, some really great players in the years, but I feel like it's been a while since the Knicks had people that were players in particular, because I think that matters the most. Players who were like, who seemed like leaders and seemed like leaders that you can trust. And for RJ to be there at 21 and Quickly is how old? 23? 22?
I think it's 22. Yeah. And I think that, I think there's awesome. Probably been a lot of players that have tried to fill the vocal part of that.
Yeah.
But the Knicks have a lot of players who talk the talk and walk the walk. One thing I did not say, and I should, just to be fair, because I know a lot of people will talk about this. RJ's defense was putrid tonight. I'm just going to say that. It's been bad all season. Last season, I mean, there's been a flashes. He had a nice game against Ja Morant.
Yes.
But for the most part, last season, we were regularly seeing him take on matchups like Devin Booker, Kawhi Leonard, guys like that, and really doing well. I think Derek Reifer, I'm sorry if it's Reifer, apologize, Derek, if you're listening to this, but he posted a graph of RJ's defensive DPM, Darko DPM, and it was a sharp upward trajectory until last year, and it's just been down this year. But for the most part, you can see IQ, RJ walk the walk and talk the talk, right? So it's not like when Randall tries to lead, but then he's not getting back on defense.
Yeah.
You know, like how much leadership can you show? Whereas, you know, RJ for his credit, RJ has made a lot of mistakes on defense. I think he's been lazy on defense. IQ has made very few mistakes on defense.
But or offense. Like, he never turns the ball over.
He's been much better about that late. And Obi, like that's the biggest difference. It's like, I'll say this too. Like I was thinking about Obi versus Randall today. And a lot of people are like, they can't play the same. They play the same position, but it's extraordinary how opposite they are as players. Randall is better, is a better player. I'm not arguing that he isn't. Randall's a better ball handler. He's stronger. And he's better at hitting tough shots. Obi is better at moving without the ball. He's better at getting vertical. He's a better passer. He's a better quick decision passer, right? Randall, because he draws so much attention, is better at like making the crazy pass.
Yeah.
But Obi makes a lot of quick decisions, and he makes like he is more of that kind of a passer. And he moves more, right? And then on defense, Randall is better at switching, and he's more athletic. But Obi is less likely to take plays off, and he's better. He's longer, right? Because he's longer and he can jump higher, so he's better at the rim. So they're like very. So like that's the thing, right? If you want to run an offense through a player, Randall is the better player. If you want to have a guy switch everything, Randall is the better defender. But as part of a team concept, Obi does everything else better by a lot. And I think that on this team, that's going to mean more in terms of leadership. Do I think the lack of leadership has been what's plagued this team? No. Because I think Tips provide that. I think Todd just provides that. I think also you just have a group of the young guys are very much locked in and the older guys are professionals. Like the closest we had was Fournier making a couple of, you know, maybe questionable comments about Tibbs, but I don't think lack of professionalism has ever been a question with this team. But it's notable, right? And to your point, yeah, like I think the young guys, like all of them seem to be like high level work ethic guys who are locked in, live, breathe, sleep basketball. I guess you don't need to say so. Eat, breathe, sleep basketball, whatever you want to call it. Like those are like Grimes, IQ, McBride, RJ. They're all guys that you know are going to go like balls to the wall for 48 minutes. Sims. By the way, I don't think Cam has had this reputation, but being in that environment, I've seen that from Cam too. So I think that's the future of the team. And I think if Randall can be a part of that, I think he's very capable of adding a great amount of skill that those guys don't have. But if he can't, he can't.
The Knicks play again this weekend on Saturday at matinee. They're hosting Cleveland at 1 and then Sunday at 6 p.m. They're in Orlando. They could be eliminated by Saturday as long as the Hawks win before then. But even if the Knicks are no longer in contention, You're going to want to tune into the games to see RJ Barrett's somewhat shameless pursuit of the 20-point per game average that he is currently achieving. Sorry, if RJ was not like our golden prince, some of these late game, like he is taking the ball and going 94 feet in garbage time for buckets. Like if it was anybody but RJ, I know people would have something to say, but if Randall was trying to get to 20 a game doing that shit, RJ's done it the last couple of losses and it is obvious. I love you, RJ. I'm not telling you to stop. I'm just telling you someone might stop you one of these days. But yeah, so two games this weekend. We will surely reconvene with you around that time. After that, there's only three more games this year. Everything is really winding down pretty quickly. So we'll get into a lot of late season stuff and start doing some more forward-looking stuff with the draft and the offseason. So again, for Stacey Patton, Matthew Miranda, thank you for being with us, and we will see you again in a few days.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.